Aram, what was that?
Good news. I found a dragon.
No, you didn't. Dragons aren't real, Aram.
Oh, they are quite real, Dylan. And very clumsy.
All right, I'll play. Why did you bring a dragon here?
What better way to promote Kill Every Monster than with an actual dragon? We may need to pump up the Patreon just a little.
For $2 a month, supporters on patreon.com/killeverymonster get access to ad-free episodes as they're released. For $5, you'll get them early along with audio DMs notes featuring Aram and I discussing how we made each episode.
For $10 a month, you'll get audio and video DMs notes along with extended cutting room floor content that didn't quite make it into the main episode.
We also have a $25 investor level and a $50 producer level. Support at these tiers ensures we can continue to produce Kill Every Monster and allows us to hire more talent from the community. Both levels get a personalized shout-out at the end of every episode, and producers get a welcome pack of each official Dead Ghost and Kill Every Monster pin we have left in stock.
The $2, $5, and $10 patron tiers are available with a 7-day free trial for new subscribers. So head over to patreon.com/killeverymonster and check out everything we have to offer at no cost to you.
Want another free way to help the show? Give us a review. Written reviews are amazing, but even clicking 5 stars is a huge boost. Podcast reviews are the best way we have to get the show in front of new listeners. You can leave reviews for Kill Every Monster on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Podcast Addict.
Find all the ways you can support the show and leave us a review at patreon.com/killeverymonster. My name is Aram, and my pronouns are he, him. I'm the writer and producer of the Dungeons & Dragons podcast, God's Fall.
My name's Dylan. My pronouns are he, they, and I'm a physicist from Canada.
Welcome to Kill Every Monster. This week on Kill Every Monster, we are featuring the Rust Monster.
The Monster Manual describes Rust Monsters as strange, normally docile creatures that corrode ferrous metals, then gobble up the rust they create.
We are joined by Zach Mahdeo. Zach is an artist blacksmith from Canada. He specializes in sculpture and lighting design and works alongside his wife at their forges in Toronto and Huntsville. You can find him on Instagram at carbon.an.iron or online at carboniron.ca. He does not make swords. Welcome to the show, Zach.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Zach is a blacksmith from Canada.
Yeah, I'm a blacksmith from Canada.
Yeah.
Which is the perfect person to come on and talk about this little metal-eating bastard.
Well, yes, in some ways. I do want to preface this by saying, for anybody, in case Aram forgets to mention it in the bio, I'm not a scientist.
Right.
I hit stuff with hammers for a living.
Yeah, and occasionally you see rust. I don't know how that doesn't make you an expert. We're good to go.
There's a bunch of different facets where you can be sort of an expert in rust. And like, yeah, there's a guy I know from grad school who knows a whole bunch of electrochemistry. But at the same time, like knowing how rust forms and having a feel for how metal acts and what rust does. Wildly different games. Zach, what is a rust monster?
So the rust monster is just a big bug. Some might say too big. But yeah, it's just this guy. They live underground mostly and pretty much just want to be left alone. They're scavengers and they don't really bother people unless those people come up on them wearing a bunch of tasty metal stuff.
Yeah, live underground, want to be left alone. Sounds like most bugs, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
We can address this off the hop. Like all of that bit of the description is what throws me off.
Yeah.
Simply because like there is no real impetus for these to be a combat encounter. So I just like looked at the picture and went, well, that's a flea.
Yeah. Yeah. But it turns out they're 6 feet long.
Yeah, it turns out they're the size of a fucking big dog.
Which is upsetting, but also less dangerous than if they were the size of a flea.
Right.
And traveled in swarms.
But that also makes it really weird, because they're docile, right? Like, if they're that big and docile, they're not a thing.
No, that's a cow. It's a cow.
Yeah.
If you find yourself fighting a cow, it's your fault.
Yes, absolutely.
If you get back to camp and you have bed bugs, except those bed bugs eat your sword, that's a dungeon hazard. That's an adventuring concern. That's, to me, far more interesting.
It's not an enemy. And that's why, also, it's weird that of all of the things in this book, this is the one that has monster in its actual name.
Right. I think because they have to remind you.
Yeah.
I think it's a... We can explain it away, because it's a dwarf thing.
Right.
It lives in the Underdark. And if you've got a bunch of people who do stonework and metallurgy, and that's their entire, like, that's artistry, that's close to godliness.
It destroys their whole economy.
Yeah.
Right.
Granted, again, if it's the size of a cow and it gets into town, I feel like that's your fault.
Yeah. Put a gate up.
Do you think dwarf children go Russ Monster tipping?
Looking at their legs, no, because a cow, like little spindly bastards, you know, but like very top heavy, very easy to tip.
These things are a little bit low. Yeah.
Very low to the ground. Their legs do that like bug thing where the elbow kind of comes up and then back down. Like, you can't tip that over unless you're like on one side, fully grabbing like the edge of a plate and trying to squat it up.
But it also looks like it might be kind of pill buggy. So maybe they can roll, like they roll them down the street and have races on.
Oh, I do like that idea.
Incredibly dangerous, because the thing that causes the rust effect is the antenna.
Yeah.
So if it's rolling and those motherfuckers are just spinning off to the side.
Like, what did they have on the old, on the chariots that came out the wheels?
Yeah, little pokey pricks.
Yeah.
It's an interesting thing about the antenna, because it says the rust monster corrodes non-magical ferrous material that it can see within 5 feet of it when the antenna touch it. And that has no time on it. It doesn't say it touches it, and then a minute later, that it touches it and it corrodes. So if it's within a round, it's within 6 seconds.
It's a 1 foot cube of it in 6 seconds. So again, it's...
It used to be a lot more.
Used to be 10 feet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it used to be instant.
Which is crazy.
Which just seems like punishment for players. That's a bit too much.
For all intents and purposes, 6 seconds is instant. It's a round, right?
Yeah. Like, no, but I mean, it used to destroy a weapon instantly.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. In first and second, I believe, they started softening it up in third, which I do agree with. I think destroying a weapon instantly is just a fuck you to the players. Like, that's not fair. But I do think they overcorrected in this.
Because the thing that it does to weapons is a non-magical weapon made of metal that hits a rust monster corrodes. After dealing damage, the weapon takes a permanent and cumulative -1 to damage rolls. If it hits -5, the weapon is destroyed. And any non-magical ammunition that involves metal is destroyed instantly. So your arrows hit and the tip is gone. But like, this thing has 27 hit points.
Yeah.
I'm going to do math for a minute.
Okay, good.
You got a fighter right off the block, you know, just a standard one. They're doing probably, like, give them a longsword, right? A D8, and you have a +3 strength. On average, you're doing about 7-8 damage a round. This thing has 27 hit points. It's going to die in, like, 3 or 4 hits, depending how good you roll.
That's one fighter.
That's with one fighter just swinging repeatedly. Now, granted, this thing does a D8 +1 damage, so it might also kill your fighter before that happens. But like, if you have a party, it dies in 4 hits.
Right.
So like, the entire party gets a -1 to each thing if they're all using weapons.
And it might never get a turn.
Probably won't.
A party can handle this thing
easily.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, it's not meant. And I think
one of them.
What? Yeah, possibly one of them. It's one of those things where I just think, like, it was designed for a DM to take away items from players because Dungeons and Dragons is an adversarial game between the DM and the players. At least it was designed that way.
Yeah.
This is just, as you said, a fuck you from the DM. And players hated it.
Yeah.
So every edition, it just got reduced more and more and more. But if you're going to have it be dangerous.
Yeah, and make it interesting. Like, the one thing, like, it does say that they're docile and they generally don't care about humans, right? So I would actually, like, why not take away the bite attack? So it's not going to damage the people at all. But I want a little bit more potency on those rust attacks.
Right. Make it so you really can't hurt it with metal weapons, that they just disintegrate. It's not going to bite you. It's not going to attack you, but it's going to keep going after your things. And you got to figure out a way to, like, keep it back with 10-foot poles so it doesn't get everything.
10-foot wooden poles, because yes, otherwise exactly. Your 10-foot pole's gone.
Right. It's chomp, 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 chomp.
And then it thinks you're its best friend because you gave it a nice pole.
Yeah, you could have it as a pet.
It might think that. It might just think you're feeding it.
There was an edition where, I can't remember which one it was, but there was a 30% chance that it would stop to eat in the middle of combat.
Sure.
Like, which is
why not?
Yeah.
That sounds like a second thing, because that's like just having random percentile chances that it's going to go fuck off.
Yeah, exactly. But like, that sticks more to the description I'm reading here than an actual attack or a relentless hunt kind of thing, right? So
yeah, it's got an intelligence of 2, which is lower than most animals. Yeah. So it's particularly dumb.
Well, that's pretty average for an animal. 3 is the threshold.
Oh, 3 is the threshold? Okay. So it's average intelligence for an animal. Like, it's not making complex decisions here. It just wants to have a snack.
Yeah.
It's particularly strong.
Yeah.
It's tough. It's wise.
Somehow.
Which is odd.
Why?
Yeah.
Like, why?
Hold on, because I'm going to quantify this. Both the stats that you've given it credit for are 13.
Yeah, that's
Wait,
true.
But that's,
but those are the
that's
best stats it has.
Marginally, that's marginally above human average. Remember, like, that is a +1. It's kind of strong. Like, against a normal guy, it could probably push you over. But also, it's not like it's plowing through houses. It's not, you know, going out and taking on a bear.
But why is it wise? Why is it? It's so stupid.
I don't know.
Animals in general get high wisdom because that's what survival skills key off of.
Okay.
It's perception and hunting and finding food. So anything that has to eat outside usually gets a positive modifier to wisdom.
Also, I just pulled up Cow.
Yeah, okay.
And Cow has a strength of 18. And a constitution of 14. So it is both much stronger and tougher.
To be fair, we've been making this joke, but I'm pretty sure cows are actually a large creature.
Cows are a large creature.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, if you've ever, like, somebody gets kicked by a cow, they die. Like, that person will not be the same.
Yeah. I used to work with a guy who had a cow farm, and he had, like, his one hand was mangled because he was milking a cow and it just stood on him.
Oh.
And there's, like, they're stubborn beasts too. Like, he said he was punching the thing in the ankle and it just didn't move. I don't think it even noticed him.
One other note, a cow has a charisma of 4 and the rust monster has a charisma of 6. So a rust monster is more charming than a cow.
Wrong. Cows are adorable.
I'm going to be honest. I would much rather look at a cow than this thing.
No one wants to look at a giant bug with their back all segmented and shifting. They probably click a lot.
And its face is just bad.
And those little feather things, like, even if you don't have metal, you don't want those touching you.
No. No.
No.
There is another little point about the body here that it's they make a point of mentioning it, but it has no relevance to any part of, like, the thing's stat block or attacks or anything. Its long tail ends in a bony protrusion.
Yeah, it feels like it should have some sort of mace-like attack,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Especially if it's medium, because, like, that means that that bony protrusion is probably on the order of, like, 6 inches or so. Like, that's a big fucking...
And it should have a longer reach, too, with that.
That's fair.
If they're going to have a tail attack, it should have a reach. But no, it's just there for no reason.
No, in the same way that the rust monster is.
Yeah.
Fair.
The really annoying thing in this stat block to me is that the correct answer to a rust monster is to leave.
Yeah.
So the only reason you would ever engage with it is if you're in a long straight hall. It's sort of the gelatinous cube problem.
Right.
Like, if I'm in a long straight hallway and the thing I need to get to is on the other side and there's a rust monster in the middle, then, like, I guess I have to fight it. The difference being this is actually fast enough that I can't just stand at a distance and have the wizard ping it with whatever cantrip he's got prepared.
Well, and it does have a speed of 40 feet, so a lot of your players can't outrun it.
No, it's going to get
it. Scuttles.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm assuming it can, it can't climb. It's an underground creature that can't climb.
No, and it doesn't have a burrow speed either, which feels...
No, so how does it get there?
It invades mines.
Oh, that's it. But like from where? If it lives on, if it lives underground, where is it invading the mines from?
Yeah.
When people picture mines, when they picture metal in sort of an underground setting, they're picturing like those, you say a vein of iron and you picture like there's actually literally just a stretch of metal. I think this might have been like, oh, well, it finds the metal part and it moves through that and then it pops out because that's where you were digging the metal, not recognizing that iron doesn't come out like that, guys.
It all has to be refined. It's mostly rocks.
So it should have a dig speed. So there's that. Okay, fair enough.
As long as we're making this particular petty point about, like, that's not how metal works, they specifically rust iron, steel, adamantine, and mithril.
So that does make sense because, I mean, iron and steel are both ferrous metals, which are the only types of metals that can rust. Rust is specifically iron oxide. And adamantine and mithril don't exist, so they can be made of whatever we want.
That's true.
The only trouble is, like, adamantine is supposed to be, like, this magic sort of impenetrable metal, right?
Which iron-based metals are not.
No. And, like, there's a whole bunch of debate about what mithril is. I think it was old, like, Norse legends about impenetrable coats that are sort of where Tolkien got it. And it all comes back to, like, oh, well, it's specifically not a metal that it's non-reactive. It doesn't corrode. It doesn't. So all of their pitches are shit like aluminum or titanium. I saw one guy reference like, oh, specifically because it's low, like you have to mine deep to get mithril. It must sublimate out only at high temperatures. So it's probably palladium.
Yeah.
Or it's a metal from the dwarves.
Yeah.
I think you're thinking a little too hard on this one, but I appreciate where your head's at.
Yeah.
But yeah. Regardless, any of those, like, yeah, strictly speaking, only iron rusts. Nearly any metal will oxidize, but, like, that's...
But that's not corrosion. Oxidization actually, in most metals, forms a protective layer, which stops them from corroding.
Yeah.
So you can't corrode, like, silver, gold, copper?
You can with a lot of acid. But, yeah, they tarnish, and that tarnish actually protects them.
Oh, okay.
If you ever get really bored, something you can look up online is... Things like throwing a calcium or pure lithium into water.
Yeah. Sodium as well.
Sodium's real fun.
Yeah.
They're all shit where when they hit water, they oxidize so violently that they burst into flames. But if you just take a hunk of like lithium as it is at like room temperature in air and you throw it in the water, usually nothing will happen. Because it's oxidized on the outside, it has this protective layer. Lithium oxide is non-reactive. The moment any water gets past that, it bursts into flames and explodes. It's great. Big pink flames. Awesome. Don't do that at home. It's incredibly dangerous. But
do it at someone else's home.
Yeah. Which does sort of present the option of like, if the thing that the rust monster is doing, and I know I usually advocate against making your magic and science touch, but like we have to figure out what it's actually doing.
Yes. Yeah.
If it's doing like a rapid metallic oxidation, you can make that real fucking weird and cool.
If we go into the periodic table of elements, the vast majority of those things are metals. We're not just talking about weapons and armor. We're talking about sodium. We're talking about calcium. Your bones are made of calcium.
Sodium and calcium are metals?
Yeah.
Oh.
So in your body, they're usually like loose ions or they get bound into complexes, but like actual pure calcium is a metal.
Huh.
Silver, shiny, all that shit.
Yeah. And a lot of them are weird too. Like I can't remember which one it is, but there's one that's basically like you can cut it like butter. It's super soft, but still solid. And then you've
a lot of them.
Yeah. Yeah. And you've got stuff like gallium, which will be solid, but if you put it up to body temperature, it melts.
Is gallium the one that reacts violently with, like, aluminum and creates that weird, like, it leaches aluminum out of alloys?
Yeah, and it does that, like, sort of black Tower of Doom type thing. I think that is gallium. Yeah.
We're not going to be able to do this justice because neither of us are like organometallic chemists. No. But again, fun chemistry videos to look up when you're bored, folks. Gallium reacting with aluminum.
Yeah.
Fucking cool. All of this to say, like, there's weird chemistry shit you could kind of invoke if you wanted to with a rust monster. One of the easiest ones being, like, if you take mithril to be aluminum-like, and this thing produces rust, dwarves could want these things around specifically. Because if you take rust and you mix it with powdered aluminum, you make thermite.
Yes.
Oh.
Which I've done. It's a lot of fun.
Do not make thermite, kids.
Don't do it at fucking home, for Christ's sake.
It's a really bad idea.
The official position of Kill Every Monster is do not, as just a fun home activity, make thermite. But if you wanted to do cool shit with, like, dwarven technologies, giving them welding by way of just, no, we place these two pieces of metal against each other, we sprinkle in some rust, we sprinkle in a little bit of powdered mithril, and we light that motherfucker. And you don't look at it for a minute because, oh man, you won't have eyes anymore. But afterwards, that's one piece of metal.
And that is actually how railways are welded together. They use thermite welding. They put it, they encapsulate it, they ignite it, and it welds two railway ties or two rails together.
Yeah, well, then dwarves would have that shit. If the railroad has it, I think dwarves have it. That seems fair to me.
I think that's a fair general fantasy
for
rule.
Sure. Yeah.
The moment you start advancing technology, if some railway mogul figured it out, then dwarves have that.
Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely.
It also creates just the cool thing of, like, anytime you have, you know, high enough technology levels, somebody wants to, like, have somebody invent gunpowder.
Mm-hmm.
Thermite doesn't do gunpowder stuff. It's a very different chemical. But if you can't make guns, but also sometimes the dwarves just light shit on, like, nuclear fire.
Yeah.
That's fun.
Yeah, it can still cause a lot of damage.
Yeah, you light up, you put a bunch of thermite in a catapult, light that up and fire it. Yeah. Imagine that's going to hurt.
Well, it's probably going to hurt your catapult more than anything.
That's true. Yeah. You have to fire it quick.
Yeah. Well, you could also do, like, if you manage to separate almost like a glow stick, right, where you've got like a capsule of sort of the iron oxide and a capsule of the powdered aluminum, and you light up the capsule on fire and fire it out of a catapult, it lands looking like a kind of standard flaming load of some sort, and then shatters into a sun.
And that stuff will burn. That stuff will burn dirt. So,
wow. Right, so smack a castle wall with a few of those and you're just going to melt holes through the stone?
Legitimately, you will melt the stone.
Wow. All right.
So, like,
again, don't make it at home, kids.
Don't make thermite at home. Don't attack castles. Don't build catapults.
Depending.
Well, you can build a catapult if it's small.
Build catapults. Catapults are cool. If you're in a position to lay siege to a castle, do it. But, like, don't make thermite.
No.
Right.
That will get you put on a list.
Yeah.
Yep.
Is the rust monster, title notwithstanding, a monster?
No. I mean, it works purely on instinct. It's just a bug, and as I said earlier, it's too big for a bug.
It's not even really a problem.
No, it's docile and wants to be left alone.
That's like going out looking at a deer and being like, oh, the stuff of nightmares. This thing, like, yeah, sometimes if I leave it alone, it'll eat the shit in my garden.
Yeah.
But mostly it sees me and runs away.
With the exception of those scary vampire deer we talked about in the Paraton episode.
Yeah.
Those will suck your blood.
Yeah.
Those are monsters.
They will suck your blood, and they're tiny.
They're so small. Zach looked them up. They're like 2 feet tall.
Yeah. So they can be sneaky.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I said. That's what makes them scarier. You won't see them coming. One of them can get behind you and you're backing away from the others and then you trip and they all pounce.
I'm just going to point out as a prelude to the next question, which I think I'm going to ask very shortly. It says a lot about the monster that we have not been able to talk about it for more than like a minute or so straight before finding something way more interesting to get off on.
Well, and that, I think that's the problem, is that it could be so much more interesting.
Then let's just do that then. Let's make that the shortest segment in Kill Every Monster history.
Is it a monster? No, next. No.
Well, it's a bug. Fuck off. Hey, Zach.
Yeah.
How would you make the Rust monster not shit?
Okay.
I'll ask it clean for a ROMs edit. How would you change the Rust monster in 5th edition?
So I think starting off, like, the armor class and hit points is ridiculously low.
I'm going to quickly push back on the armor class, because I think the way that its abilities work requires it being hit.
Right.
So making it something beefy that you're going to hit a bunch,
a bag of
plays
hit points
into the effect a little bit more.
But the hit points should be higher.
Absolutely.
It needs to soak more damage.
It needs to take at least 5 hits so that it can do the thing it does.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, exactly. So, and there's a couple other things. I mean, the fact that it has no effect on magical weapons bothers me, because if your PCs are up to a certain level, they've all got some sort of magical weapon. So this thing is nothing. It's just a nuisance. For me, I think these should be a colony insect.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're specifically listed as hunting alone or in small groups, but like, even if that's true, if they hunt alone or in small groups, but fucking have a queen and a hive somewhere.
Exactly. Then you've got a caste system. So you've got, like, the ones that we see out in the world are just your workers. And you've got some soldiers back in the hive protecting a queen who, I don't know if you've ever looked up a video of a termite queen. Disgusting. And just, they're just a pulsating sack with a face.
That was my nickname in high school.
Gross.
But that begs the question, what are they bringing back?
Rust. They eat the rust. So, like, they're seeking out uncorroded metal,
mm-hmm. right?
Corroding it and bringing back those corrosion products.
Yeah.
Apparently, any metal, despite the fact that they're rust monsters, whatever. Either that or both adamantine and mithril are ferrous metals, which
somehow.
Yeah. Don't. Okay, fine, whatever. Also, you can't corrode magic shit, but you can corrode the specifically magic metals? Shut up.
Right?
Anyway, they're going out, they're finding uncorroded ferrous metals and bringing back the corrosion products. I mean, the same as a fucking ant, right?
Yeah.
I guess the ants don't pre-digest all the food, but like...
No, they're kind of like just bees then?
More like bees.
Yeah.
Bees make their hives out of a byproduct from the protein that they take, that they eat, right?
Right.
So what if these things were to make a hive out of a metallic byproduct? You have a gigantic steel hive.
Yeah, so like a termite hive, but like out of rust and whatever compound their bodies would add to it. I want them to, if they're going to bring it back, I want them to collect them in like big balls of rust on their legs like bees do. So they have these like little pom-poms of rust.
The trouble is going to be, because I looked it up a little bit earlier just out of curiosity, but the major things you can do with rust are make red pigments.
Yeah.
Or thermite.
Yes.
You can do art, or you can do something else that's also extremely visually interesting.
So these guys are either the demolition crews of the world or the high culture.
Granted, that could also be just like how they're doing the digging. If like, if dwarves figure out thermite because they observe rust monsters melting tunnels into the Underdark.
Yeah, I like that. Maybe that's what the tail's for. It's flint, not bone. So they strike the tail to make a spark, and that's how they burn the thermite.
And that would actually be part of the process of turning refining ore into a refined metal, too.
Yeah, if they've got sort of a hammering effect.
Yeah, yeah.
So they learned everything they know from the rust monster, but it's also their greatest enemy.
Yeah, we're going very, very Avatar on this one.
But yeah, I think like making them smaller and a large colony would make them a lot more interesting, and you could do way more with them.
If your party faced 5 to 8 ones that were maybe a little smaller, probably the same amount of hit points, that's a much more interesting encounter.
Do you know how locust swarms happen?
A drought?
So locusts aren't actually like a species of insect. It's sort of like a mass hysteria brought on when a swarm of grasshoppers gets too big. So, like, that could be your threat to the party, right? Like, this, they're used to seeing, you know, little rust monster colonies all over the place. But then when too many of them get together, that's when they just descend on a town or a mine.
I like the idea of these large ones basically being, like, the hive ones. Like, these are the ones that are generally moving around the tunnels and doing shit in your sort of main locus. These are a threat if they're actually the size of bugs. Make them fucking big bugs. Maybe they're the size of your palm.
Yeah.
But, like, if this is a thing that can get into your pack.
Exactly.
That's an adventuring hazard. That's a thing that can go horribly wrong.
It can come and grab your stuff when you're asleep.
You can wake up and go like, oh, God, we have rust monsters.
You're going to hear a 6 foot, probably 500 pound bug coming towards you, but you're not going to hear a palm sized one.
Not until it's inside your armor and you wake up and it's like a moth got in there. There's holes all throughout it.
Somebody get the rust monster balls.
Right.
Apparently one of the minerals that forms in iron oxides is magnetite, which is, I mean, take a fucking wild guess what that does.
Magnets?
Go figure.
So you get a lot of cool shit out of having a couple of rust monsters.
Now you can make a rail gun.
Right. Dwarves would. Dwarves would make a rail gun. That catapult is nice and all, but old Betsy here, I could hit that castle from 300 miles away.
Your options are learn more chemistry and figure out the cool shit that something with a bunch of rust can do. Like, these things could produce fucking thermite, right? They could melt holes into the elemental planes of earth and fire beneath the crust.
Yeah, that's canon now for me.
They could produce magnets, and you can do whatever you want with that. Frankly, just the idea of those being incredibly expensive because dwarves just discovered them.
And they hold proprietary information on it.
They don't even really hold proprietary information. It's like, where'd you get that? Well, I murdered a hive of rust monsters. And then we harvested the magnets out of it.
Right. Or I just saw one poop, walked up, poked it with my sword, and it stuck. It didn't come off.
No one would take it off the end of the sword either, because it is poop.
Yeah, it has to dry and harden
no
for a while.
No one's going to touch it.
You got to put it in a kiln, and then you got a magnet. Yeah.
You can't put it in a kiln because if you melt it, then it can demagnetize. Yeah.
The other thought I had for rust monster poop is if you could make them eat other metals, you can make different alloys out of their poop. Feed it a bit of iron here and a bit of chromium or molybdenum, then you've got stainless steel.
That's how the dwarves build their fridges.
Yeah.
I could see dwarves petting in a rust monster in a big wooden pen, feeding it metals to see what would happen.
Just this weird intersection between agriculture and metallurgy.
It does make sense. They're already there. They're docile, so it's not like they're going to bite your hand
exactly.
off.
Exactly. They are cows. You're just milking metal out of them.
It's one of the weirdest little sort of collaborations between elven and dwarvish culture. It's just like, we don't do farming, so if you can explain to us how to keep animals, and also, please bring wood. We need wood for this.
Yeah, also, we're not great at making wooden locks. We need a bunch of those, please. Thank you.
We tried, like, putting in a regular lock. They keep leaving. Bessie keeps getting into the town square.
I'm a fan of all of this. This is so much more interesting than just a bumbling insect.
It's still a terrible encounter.
Yeah, now you're just slaughtering somebody's farm animals.
Stick around for next week. Kill every monster. Sheeps. Is it a monster? Got horns? Probably.
Well, a sheep will fuck you up. A sheep will knock you off a mountain.
They are, probably more aggressive than these things are described.
Vardian, get in. Close the door.
Sure. Hey, Dylan. You've been busy up here.
Yeah, this is what work looks like.
I've been trying to figure out a solution on the monster ecology problem. I need a couple of sigils in the right spots.
Dylan, are you sure about this?
I wasn't entirely convinced magic existed until last week, Aram. I'm not certain about anything.
I assume this is one of those things you weren't quite sure about?
I mean, I could probably get better materials for this if we had more funding.
Well, for $2 a month, supporters on patreon.com/killeverymonster get access to ad-free episodes as they are released. For $5, you'll get those ad-free episodes early, along with audio DM notes featuring Dylan and I recapping what went into producing each one.
For $10 a month, you'll get audio and video DM's notes, along with extended cutting room floor content that didn't quite make it into the main episode.
We also have a $25 investor level and a $50 producer level. Support at these tiers ensures we can continue to produce Kill Every Monster and allows us to hire more talent from the community. Both levels also get a personalized shout out at the end of every episode, and producers get a welcome pack of each official Dead Ghost and Kill Every Monster pin we've got left in stock.
The $2, $5, and $10 Patreon tiers are available with 7-day trials for new subscribers, so head over to patreon.com/killeverymonster and check out everything we have to offer at no cost to you.
Want a free way to help the show? Give us a review. Written reviews are amazing, but even clicking 5 stars is a huge boost. Podcast reviews are the best way we have to get the show in front of new listeners. You can leave reviews for Kill Every Monster on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Podcast Addict.
Find all the ways you can support the show and leave us a review at patreon.com/killeverymonster.
A small dwarven mining operation. There was a emergency call. During one of the sort of major excavation phases, you know, you dig the tunnels deeper and deeper until you find your vein, and then you sort of expand out. You know, there's the linear phase, and then there's sort of a growth phase of the tunnels. So as they're digging through in this sort of probing phase of the operation, folks came up, major visual damage. The major complaint was, as we were digging this tunnel, the sun burned through the mine. Just there was a point where everything got really, really hot for a minute, and then the ceiling melted. Just liquid gave way. And the sun fell through the tunnel, landed on the ground, melted through the ground. Screaming, panic, like at least one person died. A couple made it back up. There was a small effort to like get the last like 3 guys who were trapped on the far side of this, like wound up being a 6-foot-wide hole, which is much further than dwarves can jump. This is really an effort to get them back across. Mortesh! Caused a huge panic. There was a meeting, you know, management. It was a full couple of days of trying to figure out what this could be before someone finally got a hold of like the right sort of middle manager who had just the convenient degree, moved up through the tiers, stopped, and all he was supposed to do, this guy was supposed to get the message and tell the other guy that there was a meeting. He's like, hey, yeah, we got this. It looks like a tunnel got burnt through. They're trying to figure out what we should do next about it. Honestly, it kind of looks like a rust monster tunnel. And that changed the game. So now we have a target. We understand what's happening. The next phases from there were pretty easy. Operation was immediately thrown together. A couple individuals were selected as basically scouts. If rust monsters are digging through here, we need to figure out, you know, how expansive is this network? Is this same as ours, these sort of probing tunnels where they're trying to find the ore deposits that they're going to feed on? Have they already found the ore deposits? In which case, this operation is fucking done. We got nothing left to do here. Aram,
Yes.
Among those chosen as various sort of scouts to go down the couple of branches of tunnels that they've managed to find in the week and a half since. Tell me a little bit about your character.
You see, Dylan, some of these scouts.
This is always the worst start to a fucking description when you fucking do this to me.
You see, Dylan, some of these scouts are going in through the base levels, more towards the ground. Coming in and looking in through these expansive tunnels we've already dug. But the elite among us, the specialized individuals, are the true mountain dwarves who come in through the holes on the top. And that's where Bundor Froststrike excels. So Bundor Froststrike has been hiking this mountain for the last couple days with just the supplies on his back, facing the biting wind as he gets above his hole, secures his rope, and gets ready to descend onto victory and valor.
Yeah, I'm trying to work out, like, a rust monster wouldn't have come in from the surface.
No, that's right. They wouldn't have. And that's how I'm going to get them by surprise.
So are you trying to get, like, you dug your own hole to fall into the top of their tunnels?
We have to dig these high vertical shafts for airflow. If we're going to make a large enough operation, I'm going in through the vent.
Okay, yeah. So you're coming down this air shaft knowing... Okay.
You're Mission Impossible.
This is now coherent. Okay, sir, I understand.
I thought you and I spoke, Dwarf Man. I thought we were on the same page here.
Anyway, so you come down one of these sort of ventilation shafts, knowing that, like, the way these are dropping through, like, again, the way that the rust monsters mine is by creating this sort of thermite product and just burning holes through, which means in all likelihood, it's actually fallen quite a ways before it hit the tunnel that these dwarves saw. So you're coming off and just checking sort of down the branches of these ventilation tunnels where that first entry came through. It's not a bad plan because there's a weird sort of chemically smoke smell that just holds for a long time.
Yeah. I imagine thermite is stinky. That does track.
Probably. I honestly don't know. I'm making shit up. But it's a game about dwarves, so I can make up whatever I want. And all the thermite experts out there can fight me. Actually,
but
don't.
Not
if
with
you know
thermite.
A lot about thermite, don't, like, that's cheating.
Yeah, no. No, we don't want to fight thermite people. So, come out, your car's melting. Yeah.
My wife gets so mad at me.
this is your fault.
Stupid podcast got our car melted. Anyway, so you come down through the ventilation shafts. You manage to sort of track where that smell, that acrid burning comes through and sort of follow it back. As you mentioned, there's a lot of people who are, like, coming to these tunnels and, like, finding the places where you can walk. There's one or two people who literally just found where it went through and went further down. But the only thing that's going to accomplish is you're going to find the first rust monster we saw digging the new tunnel. What are you going to learn from that? You go find the tunnel, go up, and start basically working your way through. I want to know, what's the long-term game here? Like, are you going to, like, just... Is this a single-man job? You're just going to find all the rust monsters and exterminate them?
Well, I mean, no. I mean, you just can't. Even though I've enameled my Warhammer and protected myself the best I can, it is a game of attrition. You can only kill so many rust monsters. If I do see ones, I'm noting where they are. I'm making little marks on this map as I go. Dwarves have a natural ability to understand how deep they are, so I can pretty accurately track how deep I am when I've marked them off. My goal is to find, if there is one, a hive. Singular rust monsters, not so much of a problem. A hive is a big deal. And if I can find the hive, if I have a chance to disrupt it, sure. Otherwise, I'm just going to mark off where it is, go get the rest of them, and we bring in the strike team.
Gorgeous. All right, then.
Preferably of dwarven clerics and wizards.
I want you to make me two rolls.
All right.
We're going to make a survival roll. This is your sort of hunt, basically. You're still going through a good number of tunnels, and the combination of trying to, like, follow back where the initial branch came from and also just keep track of where the fuck you are so you can get back in the long run.
Right.
Is not entirely trivial. Depending on how well you're doing on the survival, we're also going to do a dexterity check because you're coming up against rust monsters. Like you mentioned, you've enameled a lot of your equipment, but if that gets scratched off in the course of this...
Yep. Problem. All right. Survival first. And that is an 18 plus 2 is 20.
That's fantastic. All right. Then we're going to go a DC of 10, basically. You've been able to track this. You can see all the indications of sort of where the old tunnels are. And fortunately, because they're sending out scouts to dig, right? They're not coming down these tunnels again until there's sort of a report back of go this way. So you're not running into major threats or anything stupid like that. It's just, can you navigate these tunnels without scratching the shit out of your gear?
I've got a big piece of red chalk. I'm making X's on tunnel branches that I've searched, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So give me a DC 10 dexterity of just tunnel travel.
Dexterity save or roll?
It's
the same. Doesn't matter. No.
I was like, I'm pretty sure you're playing a fighter. You don't have...
Jesus. This. Natural 20. I'm more dexterous than any dwarf has ever been.
You're coming through these tunnels, and the major thing is, like, they're a weird sort of oblong shape, right? They're... Yeah, these rust monsters are medium size, but at the same time, like...
Oh, wait. I have to roll that at disadvantage. I'm sorry. I'm wearing plate, so I have to roll that at disadvantage.
I appreciate your honesty.
13 plus 1 is 14.
Okay, less impressive, but still a success. Essentially, you're sort of relying on some of your mountaineering, right? Like, a lot of these dwarves are coming through these tunnels sort of expecting relatively natural digging patterns. Rust monsters have pretty powerful legs on the sides.
Right.
They kind of scramble up the sides of the things. Like, your terrain going down is... incredibly steep and like jagged weird surfaces, so you're actually like laying pittons, using ropes to kind of get yourself down where you need to, being incredibly cautious to make sure that everything stays as protected for when you run into the problem as you can.
Yeah, the problem with pittons is that they're made of metal.
Yeah, I was just about to ask if those pittons are enameled. And how easily is that coming off when you hammer them into...
Because if you strike them, it would just shatter, yeah. So, yeah. No, I've got a little mallet with, like, vulcanized rubber, and I'm, you know, boom, 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 but still, yeah.
So you're leaving a trail for me.
Yeah.
If you had a rubberized mallet, you wouldn't be able to pound the pittons in because you're trying to pound them into stone.
Yeah. Right, no, fair enough.
Not only stone, but, like, the kind of stone that has, like, metal ores in it, which I...
Right.
Your hammer's breaking some enamel off, too.
I've got a normal hammer, and I've got my war hammer. Those are the two hammers I've got, yeah.
Pounding in pittance, that'll fuck up your enamel. You're not going to win that fight. You got to just pound it in. Hitting a bug. Enamel might survive that. You can get through a couple.
Got a bit of give. Yeah.
All right.
So, but at this point, the rust monsters can probably start smelling some metal around.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
If you have a pack of pittons and you have, you know, this extra hammer that's loose, rust monsters can sense ferrous metals up to 30 feet.
30 feet, which is useless. It should be further, but that's fine.
Especially through stone?
Yeah.
I could pretty much detect anything I can see within 30 feet.
I can also detect things that are in the room with me.
Yeah.
How long do you think you explore before debating turning back?
So the hike up was 3 days. Mm-hmm. I've been lowering myself down for about half a day. I've got enough supplies for one more day down here, back up, picking up the supplies I left at the top and walking down the mountain. If I stay here for more than... like half a day, then I've gone too far.
Okay. Then you are starting... You're very aware. There's an underlying tension in all of these things, right? Especially with tunnels. Especially with something that's digging around you.
Yep.
Because there's no guarantee that your path back is the same.
And there's no guarantee I'll find water down here. And that's my biggest burden right now.
Mm-hmm. Water's fucking heavy.
Yep.
So it's just that feeling of, like, if you can't go straight back the way you came, you're at a major risk of not even getting consumed by monsters, or you're just going to starve in a hole.
That's the worst death. Yeah.
When you start hearing these sort of hard, chitinous scrabbles against stone, I gotta imagine that's a good feeling.
Well, in yes, only no. this case, yes.
The immediate, well, that's the thing, right? The immediate relief of, okay, I'm near them. I'm about to get the thing I need to be able to go back.
Right.
So, I want you to give me a stealth roll.
Oh, okay. This will also be a disadvantage. Mm-hmm. And that is going to be a 4 + 1 = 5.
Once you hear the scrabbling, you don't want to pound in another pin. Like, you're not 100% clear. Like, you've dealt with this sort of situation. You've talked to people about it. You've probably even fought rust monsters once or twice yourself. You're not entirely clear if they hear.
Right.
Like, what senses do these things have? Right. Little bit nebulous.
If I was in the woods and ran into a bear and had to like hide or shout or like poke it with a stick, I would know no more about the bear than I did before.
So you try to avoid putting in any more pittons just on the assumption that these things have some sort of auditory interaction.
Yeah.
And you kind of try to lower yourself as low down on the rope alone as you can. It's slow going. You're trying to be careful simply because if this rubs now, you don't have it like linked into the pittons anymore. It's just grating against the stone.
Right.
So if there is any slope, again, you're running the risk of it'll snap and you'll fall.
Yeah.
You get out over the edge, just sort of holding this, and you have to sort of pull out a loose pitten and just use it as like a handhold. You just gently dig it in to like a loose sort of crevice so that you have a handhold somewhere. And you look out and you see 40, maybe 50 of these things. It's maybe 120, 130 feet across. You can see weird sort of formations in the walls. Something that, actually, you know what? Roll me, what would this be?
Perception?
Yeah, perception or an investigation, whatever is higher for those. And get your bonus for stone cunning, because you're a dwarf and no one ever gets that.
What is my stone cunning bonus? Hang on.
You have, it's a racial bonus dwarves have for when it's rock shit.
Right. I'm looking, stone cunning. Whenever you make an intelligence history check related to the origin of stonework. No, it's just for like, that's only for like built stonework. That's like an artist role.
But I think you would notice the difference between built stonework and something created.
But also use it anyway, because I think that design, that choice to make it specifically like art history for dwarves is bad design and a useless role.
All right, so I will double my proficiency to +4.
Yes. Yeah.
All right, so 15 plus 2 is 17, plus 2 more is 19.
When you look up and you see these sort of weird sort of indentations into the walls, what you realize is like this area, like where it's largely hollowed out, clearly used to be a relatively massive deposit of some sort of ferrous mineral. And you can see the outline of what was an iron deposit that has been just hollowed out. It's lightly crusted over with this sort of like ruddy red color.
Right.
Just hollowed out in this weird sort of jagged structure.
Okay, so normally that would be bad, but if there's that much iron in here that it's supporting this many creatures and they haven't moved on, there must be a lot more left. This is still a very rich mine.
Roll me, again, survival or nature, whatever's higher for you.
I will roll survival. Do I get my dwarf bonus for this one, too?
Sure. Fuck it.
And that is going to be a 14 plus 4 is 20.
Okay. No, it isn't.
Oh.
That's 18.
No, yes, 14 plus 4 is 18. No, you're right.
Yeah, I was going to run with you for a minute, but
you
like...
You said that so confidently, I actually just let it go.
I mean, an 18 and a 20, immaterial difference, but for the sake of those at home
who
tracking
do math
numbers...
Yes.
No, it isn't.
Fair.
But, yeah, if they are expanding out, like, you're looking at the way this sort of hemisphere has been hollowed out, it means that there was definitely a lot of iron here. The fact that they're sort of expanding the way they are, those tunnels are branching out, means they've exhausted what's right here. There is probably more. Frankly, the rust monster that kind of caught you guys onto the problem was frankly doing your job as well, right? It was a scout. It was investigating.
Right.
The good sign is they haven't exhausted this entire mountain to the point where they're just moving on. They think there is more. And rust monsters aren't stupid.
No, they know.
They have a good feel for when they've exhausted an environment, but it also means that, like, a good chunk of what was here ain't. The other thing you clue into is the way that things are riling. You can see one rust monster. 19, 20 feet tall.
Oh, that's not good.
Bloated. Just curled near the center of the room. That's a queen.
Yeah.
In general, like, you've heard rumors of these things that they're, like, they're supposed to be relatively active monarchs, I guess. You know, they are the thing that hollows out the dome. You right. find a spot, you get the queen in there, and they're big enough and strong enough to actually hollow out the stone, whereas the rest of the rust monsters are relying on this weird, like I said, the thermite reaction to dig their tunnels, or like the actual tunnel digging is this slow, really ponderous process. That thing fucking carves out rocks.
Right.
When it's weird and bloated and lying on its side, that's gonna lay eggs.
Oh, we can't have that. It's too close. Even if we abandon this search whatsoever, we don't live far from here. We can't have this. And it could lay eggs any day.
The fact that you are well-versed enough to kind of recognize that possibility,
yeah,
is an anomaly. Like, nobody knows that much about rust monsters except for people studying rust monsters. Identifying how pregnant this thing is, that you don't fucking know.
Yeah, I'd have to go back, talk to the council for a week and a half. They debate for another week. By the time they got to an answer, these things are going to hatch anyway.
Yeah.
I have to deal with this, or at least try.
How do you want to do it? Or actually, sorry, I haven't paid off on a major thing. You rolled a 4 stealth.
Right. Yeah. So while I'm looking at this, yeah.
You're going like, oh shit, I have to go back. And you're sort of like debating, and you like go to reposition. As you do, your grift ships on that pitten and you drop it.
Oh no, it's slow motion fall.
Like, you go to leave it there because you're very used to like pounding them in. These should be solid things. This was just sort of lodged in. So the moment you shift to like just adjust something on your pack, it just tilts out. And you hear the ting as it drops. And you're like, huh, maybe they don't hear. They don't seem to react to it. And then it lands near a rust monster. And you watch these two long antennae with these weird tiny hairs, almost feathery. It flicks up and they shift. Almost like a radar in response to iron landing near them.
Right.
And you watch a current form.
I try and hide.
All right. Give me a new stealth check.
Oh, disadvantage again. That's a 17 and a 5 plus 1 is 6. No hiding.
You go to hide, but you're like trying to scrabble up the rope on the stone, and you just dropped your major handhold. So what I want from you now is another dexterity check.
Oh God, what if I just die before Zekiva gets to play the monster?
Just falling damage?
Yes. Okay, that's not bad, actually. My lowest is a 14, so 14 plus 1 is 15.
You nearly fall. Like, you manage to catch yourself, and you actually shift. You realize what's happening and you fall and land on your arm. It hurts like a motherfucker. But you realize if you had landed on the plate, you would have slid.
Right.
And you would have scraped that thing clean on the way down.
Right.
Like, you managed to keep that sort of protective layer intact, but you are now just like one arm kind of slammed under you, one arm up, holding onto the rope, kind of dangling out of this like relatively steep, like 30 degree angle tunnel.
Yeah.
Just trying not to drop onto the rust monsters that seem to be cluing into your presence. Zach, what does the hive look like?
So I think, yeah, like the way you described it, with a large sort of dome, there's probably a few pockets there where eggs are stored, kind of similar to where a beehive has all their larvae in little segments. And there's tunnels leading off in all sorts of directions. Like you said, this was a big sort of main iron ore deposit, and there's all sorts of branches of veins leading off to it, and we've followed quite a few of those. And I think mainly what you're seeing is there's a few probably larger rust monsters around the floor, around the queen. They're not harvesting anything. They're protecting the larva, the eggs and larvae, and the queen.
You see the one that, like, just sort of slowly meanders over, and the antenna basically sweep over the pitten, and it's almost immediately gone. It destabilizes. It collapses in on itself. And this thing, if you look at the picture in the monster manual, they don't have a snout at all.
It's a really horrible face.
They don't have, like, mandibles either. They just have a flat, very human face. Mm-hmm. So unfortunately, that would mean to eat the pitten that it's now rusted, it slams its face directly into the ground. Like, imagine a human being trying to eat a hot dog off the floor.
Or like when they do pie eating contests, you just put your whole right. face in the pie. Yeah.
Right. It's already kind of undignified because it's a cockroach. Yeah. It's a giant flea. It wasn't looking noble at any point. But, like, this is one of those times where you look down and, like,
its face is flat because it has to make a suction on the ground and then hoover up the rust. Is it coming to me is the important part.
Oh, it's eating.
Yeah. It's eating?
Oh, it's eating the pitten.
Well, and I think you're kind of coming out of a tunnel that's more near the ceiling, right? So
right.
I don't think at this point that one can reach you.
You're dangling out of this, like, 30-degree slope, and it comes down, so you're still at, like, it is shallow enough that you could go down safely in a semi-controlled way.
Right.
But it's also a steep enough slope that you're bordering on falling.
Okay. Are there stalagmites?
Highs or lows? What do you like?
I'll take high.
All right. Okay, that's a 6.
Okay, so no.
This structure is very, very rough, but like I said, we're talking about a 20-foot tall roach beast, mm-hmm. kind of hollowed it out, right?
Yeah, she's cleared a big space there, yeah.
Yeah, a stalagmite has to be naturally formed, yeah.
Over many, many millennia. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. Does it look like I can collapse any part of the ceiling above her?
Yeah, for a space of this size, there's like a couple fairly major columns that, like, if you were able to, like, then there's a decent chance this place would come down.
Okay, okay. Then here's my plan.
Let's hear it.
I'm going to carefully lower myself down. And as I walk with, you know, non-threateningly towards the biggest column I can find, mm-hmm. I'm going to, if one gets too close, toss it a pitten, hope it doesn't come for me, get to this column and just drive whatever I've got left into it, cracking it all around and then trying to get the hell out of there before it collapses in.
So you've still got your pitten hammer, which is uncoated.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay. Correct.
So
yeah, like, and my normal war hammer.
Yeah, there's definitely more than one within 30 feet of you right now. Also, probably the queen.
Right. Okay. Then
roll me.
Yeah.
Animal handling.
Oh no. 14.
Zach, you're the animal. How do we feel about a 14?
To do what?
Basically, to accomplish the more or less the plan he's talking about, can he sort of get through this space and give that feeling of placation to the hive?
Scatter enough pittance to distract them for a while.
I think to distract them for a while, once you start striking at those structures that we know the queen has left to keep this place safe, that's going to be a problem. So I'm going to say, yeah, you distract a few of them. You see them stopping to munch on the shit that you drop. But they also do still smell the iron that you have on you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
This is just okay. Like a snack right now.
Right. Okay. Then I'm going to try and move quickly.
Okay. You start, like, you get that little sort of distraction set up, and you start running towards this thing. You can see, in addition to the, like, kind of telltale red-orange rust, these little pockets of almost matte white. You know, in places there's also, like, these darker powder, like, I want you to roll me. It's going to be an intelligence, I think, just flat intelligence.
Okay.
Because there isn't a metallurgy skill in D&D.
19 plus 1 is 20. I'm smart.
There were several deposits here.
Oh.
Silver tarnishes black.
Right, right.
A lot of the lighter metals tend to tarnish whitish colors. You're seeing basically other corroded metals. For a 20, I'll tell you, they must have mithril down here.
The holy metal. The metal of my people.
It's also the metal, having, you know, a base understanding of rust monsters, having not even a base understanding, like a fairly robust understanding of rust monsters. It's how they make the fire. It's how they build that tiny little sun.
Right. I gotta be real careful not to make a spark, is what you're saying.
That's one interpretation of what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Then I think when I do get to this column, I'm going to wet the column, strike a few times, pour a little bit more water, just keep wetting as I'm working to try and control the sparks.
Well, as you're striking this stone and metal, you're knocking bits off of your hammer. So I think I'm... And my rust monsters, you only gave them a couple of pittance. So
my pittance hammer isn't even enamel.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I didn't enamel that hammer.
They're probably done their snack pretty quickly.
Ah, shit. fuck. Okay, then I have a shield, and I have a warhammer, and I have my armor. So I think the next thing I would do is, if I see them start to turn on me, I'm just going to fling this shield as far as I can over them, but low enough that it passes over so they get a whiff of it.
Okay, give me an athletics roll.
You're Captain Americaing this?
Yeah. I'm going to Captain America. Athletics. That is a plus 5. That is a 12 plus 5 is 17.
This is also enameled, so you take the first step of, like, you've just pounded in a pit, and when you hear the noise get close enough to get worrying, you pull the shield off your back and immediately just scrape it down the pit, just as hard and as deep as you can. When you see that metal shine under the enamel, you fling it, aiming not even above them, you're aiming through antenna. You want them to brush across it.
Mm-hmm. Give them a taste.
And the moment, like, there's a fleeting brush, it's enough to just kind of, like, you're buying yourself time, though. Like, you're looking at this, and they are going to get here.
Yep.
Yeah. So I think, like, well, first of all, let's how many rust monsters is a fair amount to be down here in this area?
I think I said, like, 40?
Okay. So that's going to distract, you know, the ones in
the
that
ones
line
on the right.
Through.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's right. Also like I said, it was like 100 and some odd feet across. Like, they're spread out.
Yeah. It's also going to bring attention to some of them, right? Because there's some on the total opposite side that don't even know you're there yet.
Right. Right. the message is getting around.
Yeah.
They do this little, they're like ants. They're putting out a pheromone. The other ones are getting it. Yeah.
So as you're doing this, like, you're trying to destabilize this pillar by, like, pounding in these little pittons, like, a couple of inches at a time, right?
Working my way around.
This is incredibly slow work.
Yes.
As you're getting a feel for how deep in you're pounding this, the thickness of the stone, the amount of weight that's on it, because that's the other bit, right, is, like, you have to get a good amount of destabilization in there because it's apparently already sufficiently compacted to be strong enough to hold up this.
Compression is a bitch. I hear you.
You're starting to get the feeling that you might have to do like two laps around this before you start approaching enough structural damage to collapse it. And you barely think you've got enough pittons to get around it.
Shit.
Those big motherfuckers are also sniffing you out, and if they get close enough, you're gonna have fewer pittons.
Okay, I start kicking off like as I unstrap a boot, pound, 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 kick off the boot, pound, 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 unstrap a boot, pound, 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 kick off the boot, pound, 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 just shedding pieces of armor as I'm going.
Sure. Okay. So now you're gathering them in a circle around you.
I'm making a snack. I have. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Okay. We're gonna say your AC is down to 16 as you're down to half plate.
Yep. Yes. Yes.
God, how do we sort of adjudicate finishing this job? I guess.
Well, I think by now, let's say if you've done one lap and you've shed some armor, there's a circle of armor around you, which is now a circle of rust with a circle of rust monsters. Let's say there's maybe like six.
I didn't realize I was going to have to do another lap, and now I'm coming back on the point where I started. Yeah.
Yeah.
You even had like a moment where you're like, can I just get away with just, and just hurling down, like you pounded the pittons in. Now you're just, can I like leverage them and chip out the stone? And you're like, this isn't going to fucking, you're going to bend the pitten before you really get like significant enough damage there.
Fuck.
And you watch one of them as they finish the first boot you kicked off. Antenna just start whipping around as it's looking for the next little chunk. And one of them brushes over the pitten, and you watch it just all the way in, just turn into a deposit of rust.
Okay.
Down into the core of this.
So the one I left in it or the one I was using?
The one you left in it.
Okay. Okay, which is kind of good because then it weakens the hollow where the pitten was in. So that's kind of good, but eventually I'm going to run out of pittens.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Are any of them coming from me yet?
Where do you keep your pittens?
So I have a pouch on my side,
okay.
Right? I've got a breastplate left, and then I've got a hammer high on my shoulder so that the hammer head is high and the handle's low, and I've probably got some kind of helmet on.
Yeah, but those are all enameled because that's your warhammer and your armor, right?
Right. The warhammer and the armor is enameled. The hammer I'm using isn't. The cloth bag holding the pittons is definitely not.
So I think probably when that one gets close enough to actually touch the pittons in the pillar, in the column, they're probably going to sniff out the stuff that you have on you. And that hammer and the bag of pittons is a lot more iron than just one pitten every few inches.
Sure is.
So,
yep.
Yeah, I think they might start coming for you.
Ah, shit. Okay. The first one, I toss my helmet.
Okay.
Just plunk it off, throw it into its gaping maw.
Yeah.
Right? Pound, 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 pound.
You throw the helmet to it. Yeah. It doesn't catch it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because that's not how these things work. You hit it in the face with a helmet.
Oh, sorry.
It then just immediately smells iron and just like, ooh.
And your helmet's gone.
Shit. Pound, 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 pound.
Okay. Some of the other ones are finishing the snacks you've left them, so.
Oh, toss the next one. Like, the breastplate comes off in like two halves, right? So yeah. I toss a half to one, pound, pound, pound. Toss a half to the other, pound, pound, pound.
Okay.
I'm just going as fast as I can. all I've got left is my two hammers.
And you see at the base of the thing, making the second lap, you start to see little shards of like semi-digested metals.
Yeah.
Amongst them, you see a very bright silver glint. You see a shard, maybe about the size of a dagger, very thin, of undigested mithril.
Because they can't eat it.
They've eaten around it, and like because it was just this embedded thing, it is a fine, sharp thing.
Right, like a piton.
Yeah, a little bit smaller.
Right.
Frankly, like with the size of the end of it, you're not sure that you'd be able to like pound it in effectively.
Got you. Okay. Okay.
You don't think you could jam this into its own hole?
But I could jam into a hole I've already made.
A hole you've already made that's currently full of iron rust.
Okay. Okay. All right. But I need time to dig that out. So I will take my bag with a prayer, open it, and just rainbow pitons in a as far like as a decent throw, 20-30 feet away, just a rainbow of all my pitons left, and I will immediately start digging this shard out.
Well, I was going to say, like, some, because we're doing a colony here, I think some of these are specifically for protecting the queen, some of these rust monsters. So I think at this point, they've maybe been alerted. Maybe they're not quite at you, but you can see a few of the larger ones coming towards you.
Oh, that's not good. All right.
And they have a movement speed of 40 feet, so at most it's going to take them 3 rounds to get from the opposite end of this.
And they're not at the opposite end. They're around the middle, so you got like a round and a half.
Okay, okay. I'm trying to dig this thing out then.
And you get down to it. Like, it's not that hard. Like, if it was bright enough for you to see it, you can just kind of bend down and grab it. Like, it's...
Then I'm working it free, trying to get it out of the rock.
Give me a strength check.
Strength? I'm good at 14 plus 3 is 17.
Done. You yank. Part of what makes mithril really, really hard to mine is that it tends to form around other metals. So sometimes if you're not careful, it also reads as like a contaminant. Like, mithril gets thrown away frequently. You, however, are now in a position where it's just been eaten around, and you grab it and you yank, because now it's just this jagged, sharp bastard of a piece. You standing there wearing like a breastplate and pants.
No more. I kicked the breastplate. I am wearing pants.
Do you have any chainmail under your...
No, plate? I mean, I just thought it was like a breastplate, so it like comes off like a turtle shell.
Right.
So I am like basically in a tank top, underwear, barefoot, running around this place. Yeah.
You're holding this sort of holy grail of fucking dwarven mining. What do you want to do?
I want to sprint back. Well, not sprint. I'm right there. I want to turn back around. I want to get to the first hole. I'm going to take out my pit and hammer and drive this thing home.
Okay. That is trivial. You've been driving in pitons the whole time. You are going to have to make a dexterity save.
Okay. Just going to eat it out of my hands. There you go.
I think by the time you've pulled those out, you've got some soldiers on you.
That's a 14.
You are going in there with your hammer, holding this thing steady. You slam it home as hard as you can. And as you do, that spark hits as you drive the mithril into the iron dust, and it explodes into flame.
Oh, shit.
Every rust monster goes fucking frantic. You're going to take 5 points of fire damage. And for like half a second, like the moment you hit it, the moment the spark hits, I mean, you made the face. They don't see your face because this is a podcast, but...
They can hear my face.
Correct. You see the spark and you go, oh, mother of fuck. And you look away just fast enough that like you see that shard lit behind your eyelids. And had you not moved any slower, you would absolutely be completely blind.
Right.
Is this a good time to talk about welding flash?
That's why they wear the helmets.
Yeah.
And like I said, you're going to take 5 points of fire damage as your hand is basically just engulfed in flame.
Right.
The Mithril is still in there. Like, it's still workable because it's indestructible, right?
Well, it's being consumed. Like, this is what the reaction is.
Oh, can I yank it out? No, I can't yank it out in time.
No, it's a million degrees.
You can't look at it right now, but the pillar currently has, let's say it was initially a 4-inch hole that you drove the pit into. You have 4 inches of absolute and abject inferno. We're talking about star level temperatures.
Right.
Burning in the middle of this.
Eating away at the pillar.
And every single rust monster goes frantic. Roll for initiative.
Oh, fuck. Okay.
How many initiative rolls should I be making here? Should we just do them all as one, or?
Let's do a group of like three.
I got a 14.
Okay. That's a 13 plus my dex, so that's a 14. 11 and 13.
We're going to say it's the soldiers moving first. That fire starts up. What do the soldiers want to do?
I think they're going straight for the cause of the fire. They saw you hammer that in, and they were all kind of around you anyways, so... What have you got metallic on you right now?
Hammers. I have two hammers. That's it. I've got the exposed pitten hammer, and I've got my war hammer.
Okay. So I think they definitely go for the exposed pitten hammer first, because that's the one they can sniff out and actually smell. So that is...
I believe it's a DC 11 dex save.
Yes, DC 11 dexterity saving throw to avoid the rust monster's touch. Yeah.
Okay, I have a dexterity of +1. That's it. Here it comes.
50-50. Give or take.
Natural 20.
Oh, fuck off.
21.
They come over, and part of the saving grace here is that you're already surrounded by sort of the mundane ones.
Right.
Like, you look over, you're just sort of recovering, and you see this thing come for the hammer. It lunges, and you almost go to swing at the thing, like to bat it away, and you realize, like, oh fuck no.
Oh wait. Yeah.
You go to swing and you just drop the hammer, catch it with the other hand, and just start batting with the arm and just keeping the hammer out of reach.
At this point I'm out of pittance though. So the hammer doesn't really matter.
Yeah, because you threw them.
Right.
Yeah.
Nope.
But there's more material in here to feed that fire.
We're going to say the fire is good enough. Like, this is melting the stonework. Like, you can hear the cracking start to happen behind you.
Oh, so the job's done.
The job is
I just have to get
well
back to
done.
The tunnel.
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
You are, like, you saved that hammer entirely on, like, reflex. But you're 100% right. You don't need it now. You can feel the heat at your back. And frankly, you're grateful you lost the armor at this point.
Sure, it'd be sweaty. Yeah. I'd be like baking like an oven. Yeah. All right. Then I am going to. Where is there a way through to get to the tunnel?
You could get through them. It's going to be a little bit of a thing, but you could sort of force your way through.
Crap. Okay, then that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to chuck the pitten hammer a little bit to the side. As a bit of a distraction, and then the warhammer finally comes off my back, and I'm just gonna try to forge my way through.
Okay, is this just a hard sprint, or how are you doing this?
I think I'm gonna, I'm just gonna try and withdraw to not get attacked, and if something gets in my way, I'll fight it with the hammer.
Okay,
I think it's safe to say at this point that the soldiers do see this as a threat.
Yeah.
So now they're not just going after your metal, they're going after you.
The individual sort of workers, for lack of a better word, between the fire and like you brandishing a weapon, like there's a fear response going on here a little bit. So
there was also a pile of pittons, so like the workers are a bit distracted, but you still got some soldiers coming after you.
There's a feeding frenzy, there's a panic, there's a threat response, all in the same ball of creatures, yeah.
Yeah. So you're taking a full, like, disengage, is what you're
doing. Yeah, I'm running my full 50 feet with my little stubby legs.
Okay. Are you disengaging or are you moving a full 50 feet?
Disengaging means I can move double?
No, disengaging means you don't take opportunity attacks.
Right, right. I'm disengaging. I'm not fighting this round until I'm forced to fight.
Okay, then you can only move 25 feet.
Great, because I can do it carefully. Okay, fair enough.
So you start trying to keep the hammer between you and the things as you just sort of shove your way through, doing your best to kind of like get through cleanly. The hammer is the last little bit of metal you have.
Yeah.
So you try to start making your way back towards the wall of the cave. Zach, you got some workers to play with.
Okay. So the workers, I think the majority of them are probably distracted by the rest of the metal you left around. But as you push through them, have you hit anything with your warhammer yet?
I haven't hit a single thing yet.
Okay, so it's still coated. That's the last bit of metal you have on you.
Yep.
So the workers, I don't think, are going to be distracted, but you do have three soldiers that will follow you and have a movement speed of 40.
Oh, fuck. Right. Okay.
So the one already attacked. I guess we'll go with the other two. And they're going to go with a bite because you're a threat now. So the bite is... Well, I guess I'll roll for attack first. That's an 18.
18 will hit, even with my armor on, which I'm not wearing.
A natural one. So one of them hits you. The bite is... Oh, it's a +3 to hit. So it was a 21. But anyways,
okay.
One target.
Still hits.
1d8 +1, which isn't great. But...
Well, they're not really attackers.
No, they're not.
Yeah, they're docile creatures.
That's a 7 damage.
It hurt. That definitely hurt. Like kind of chomps on my shoulder. As I'm playing keep away with the hammer.
Yeah. Zach, you want to roll for the last one? Because we're going to come back to the top of the initiative there.
Oh, yeah, sure. Okay.
Right.
That's 16 +3 is 19.
Solid hit.
And that's a 1 +1, 2 damage.
Okay, not a solid hit. That is a glancing hit. Yeah. No, but still, owie.
The soldiers are actually a fair bit bigger. Like, they're not the full, like, 20-foot titan that the queen is, but they're a good bit bigger than the workers. That being said, they don't move well around each other.
Right.
No. So once one of them has gotten in and bit you, the other one's, like, just trying to find a space to get through.
Yeah.
So I'm being... like chomped on now.
Yeah.
So careful is out the window. Yeah. I am going to run away as fast as I can.
Okay.
Invoking attacks of opportunity as I run.
Yep. From all three of them then?
I would assume so if they were close enough to hit me.
Yeah. Okay.
I will use my action surge to dash again and get as far away as I can. I want to get to that wall at least.
Zach, you roll your opportunity attacks. I'm going to double check the wording on dash.
It's a 19, so one of them hits.
Yep.
That's a 5, the other one doesn't. And that's another 5, so only one hit.
I was lucky.
And that's a 7 +1 is 8.
7 +1 is 8. Wow, that's a solid hit. That took off, but that hurt a lot. Just a big old chunk of my thigh just got to... And they don't eat it.
No, they just bite you because you're mean.
Right, right.
Are you still protecting your hammer?
I mean,
I will let you trade the enamel on your hammer for the damage of one of those hits.
Well, okay, hang on, that was 8. I'm still a little bit above half.
Yep.
Actually, I'm just at half now. I think I'll save it for when I need it to survive.
Fair enough.
So how much movement do you have with your full action surge and everything?
75 total.
75 total. Okay.
Yeah. So I run 75 feet.
To where? Because this chamber is only 120 feet.
So I get to the hole, I would imagine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. But I still have to climb.
You're going to have to climb up.
Fuck. All right. Then on my next round, I climb up or try to.
Okay. So the workers can't make it there. They've got... Well, actually, can they dash? Can monsters dash?
And monsters have access to all the standard actions.
So that gives them 80 feet. They're right there with you.
Fuck! Right. Thank God they can't climb.
Yeah, but that's the end of their turns, as they basically all catch up to you.
But they're on top of me now, so I'm going to invoke more attacks of opportunity.
That being said, the only thing you got to do is get up to that rope.
Okay, then I am going to shove my hammer into my belt in the back. So as I'm climbing, it'll give them something that like if they go up to bite, maybe their little antenna will hit the hammer and they'll focus on the hammer and not my flesh.
Give me an athletics check to get up this wall.
Oh, but no disadvantage because I'm out of armor. Okay,
not
great.
Not in armor anymore.
That is going to be 11 plus 5 is 16.
That's good enough.
But that's three attacks of opportunity.
That's an 8 plus 3 is 11.
I'll sacrifice the hammer now.
Okay.
You go up to bite. That bite catches the belt and tears it down. Aram, the rest of the climb, you're like trying to keep the pants up, but you're doing it.
I'll let him go. I want both my hands to climb.
That first one that attacked you is distracted by the hammer.
Right.
Next one's a 9 plus 3 is 12.
That will still hit me. I'm armorless, right? So I'm just 10 plus my dex. Yeah, that hits me. I have an 11 AC right now.
Okay. And that's a natural 20.
Oh, okay.
So I'll roll.
So roll damage once and then roll damage twice.
That's a 1 plus 1, so that's 2 damage.
That's good.
So 2 plus 1 is 3. And a 3 plus 1 is 4, so that's...
Okay.
One less than that, because you're not going to add the critical doubles, the dice.
So, hang on.
One less.
Yeah.
This is 2 damage.
I have 12 hit points.
So, yeah.
Okay.
Okay, 2 damage, 3 damage, and 3 damage is 8. So
yep.
You're...
No, so that takes me down to 12 hit points.
Okay.
You scrabble up that wall. You barely manage to get your hand around the rope and drag yourself up through the hole. You have enough time to, like I said, get your pants like back up or over your ass, and you start scrambling up at full speed. You have enough time to get past a pit and just boot it down behind you. And you scramble up this tunnel, hoping to God every time you kick a pit loose that it's going to be enough to keep them busy. You have, once you're up in that tunnel, you manage to get a hold of your backpack. You have your food, your rations. That is all you have. Your armor is gone. Your pittons are gone. Your hammer is gone. You're unarmed, unprotected. And you have the food to hope you get back safe. So, to wrap this up, Aram, give me a survival roll.
Oh, goddamn. Oh, goddamn. 7 plus 3 is 9.
7 plus 3 is 10, Aram.
7 plus 3 is 10.
Again. You start scrabbling up this tunnel. You hope to God that this is going fast enough. You hear just a cacophony, thunderous noise, stone collapsing behind you. The dust just choking stone, rubble, and iron dust, rust, flood up the tunnel, and you choke.
Let my pants go, wrap them around my face, tie behind my head.
Yep.
I'm using my pants as a mask.
On a 10, there's a moment of like sheer panic, but you have your hands on the rope and you keep climbing. It's a long climb back. The only thing that saves your life is you don't have to get back to the top of the tunnel. You have to get to somewhere where someone will find you.
To one of the branches that I've marked off, yeah.
You get up into the ventilation and barely holding together, because you don't even have the resources to rest properly now anymore. Like, you're fed, but you're not healing properly. Like, strictly, like, this is more than a day's travel back. You would start picking up levels of exhaustion.
Yep.
You get up to the ventilation shaft, pull your rope up as far as you can, and then as controlled as you can do it, you just let yourself fall. In that first initial shaft where they keep coming down to make inspections to check if people are coming back, you manage to come down from the top, barely holding it together. You drop a hair too far. A pair of pants wrapped around your face, wearing a shirt with an... You've probably dropped the backpack at this point because...
Right, because it was heavy.
The shaft was the end of the trip, right? Like, you standing there, mask around your face, wearing a shirt and whatever dwarves do for boxers.
It's definitely boxers. There's no dwarves wearing briefs.
Dwarf and a jockstrap. You nearly fall too far.
Was that jockstrap metal?
You climb up, push yourself up, and just drag yourself into the shaft. They see you, and there's a moment of panic. But you look up, and you can't help but smile. Because you fucking did it.
Clang-a-dang Silverbeard would be proud this day.
That's the conversation. It's just, are you okay? Did they get to you? You... just give that exact line, and there's a moment like they don't get it yet. You'll explain it later. It's fine.
Around the fire and ales of which I am owed,
and we're done.
Thank you for joining us for the Rust Monster.
If any of the ideas we've discussed on the show have sparked some of your own, tell us about it on Twitter at KEM Podcast. You'll find me at DJ Malenfant and Aram at Aram Vardian.
For ad-free episodes, early releases, bonus episodes, print-ready maps, our new audio DMs notes, and my character sheets for each encounter, head over to patreon.com/deadghostpro.
Our intro theme and many of the sound effects you hear in the show were created by BattleBards. Check them out at battlebards.com.
This episode was produced by Aram Vartian and Dylan Malenfant. I also did the edit. We were joined by Zach Mahadeo. You can find Zach and all of his work at carboniron.ca. And if you are anything like me and all of that information just fell right out of your head, you'll find everything you need at killeverymonster.com.
And we'll see you next time for Kill Every Monster.
Aram!
Sorry! Stacy's a little excited this morning. You know how toddlers can be.
Oh god, how much is that gonna cost?
Yeah, this one won't be cheap.
For $2 a month, supporters on patreon.com/killeverymonster get access to ad-free episodes as they're released. For $5, you'll get them early along with audio DMs notes featuring Aram and I discussing how we made each episode.
For $10 a month, you'll get audio and video DMs notes along with extended cutting room floor content that didn't quite make it into the main episode.
We also have a $25 investor level and a $50 producer level. Support at these tiers ensures we can continue to produce Kill Every Monster and allows us to hire more talent from the community. Both levels get a personalized shout-out at the end of every episode, and producers get a welcome pack of each official Dead Ghost and Kill Every Monster pin we have left in stock.
The $2, $5, and $10 patron tiers are available with a 7-day free trial for new subscribers. So head over to patreon.com/killeverymonster and check out everything we have to offer at no cost to you.
Want another free way to help the show? Give us a review. Written reviews are amazing, but even clicking 5 stars is a huge boost. Podcast reviews are the best way we have to get the show in front of new listeners. You can leave reviews for Kill Every Monster on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Podcast Addict.
Find all the ways you can support the show and leave us a review at patreon.com/killeverymonster. Stacy, you put that cow down right now, young lady. Don't you snarl at me.